If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code NOJOKE to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code NOJOKE. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, April 6th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
Hi, I'm Michael Weiss. Welcome back to Foreign Office. Today's episode is a special one because I'm acting as both host and fellow guest. My other two guests are Christo Grozev, he's the head of investigations at The Insider, and Roman Dobrokhotov, the founder and editor-in-chief of The Insider, and I am the editor of The Insider's English language portal. And today's show is about our big investigative report done in conjunction with 60 Minutes and Der Spiegel, into Havana syndrome and possible connections to Russian intelligence behind what the U.S. government calls anomalous health incidents. And not just any unit of Russian intelligence, but specifically one that should be familiar to listeners of the show, Unit 29155 of the GRU. This is an assassination and sabotage squad responsible for poisoning Sergei and Yulia Skripal in Salisbury, Emilian Gibrev, and a Bulgarian arms dealer in Sofia, and orchestrating a coup in Montenegro, and if you followed the work The Insider has done in the past several months, a series of explosions, terrorist attacks, really, of Bulgarian and Czech ammunition and weapons facilities. So 29155 has been rather busy in the last decade, and we're going to talk about our work with 60 Minutes and how we went about uncovering evidence that puts 29155 operatives at the scene of the crime, as it were. Two incidents involving Havana syndrome victims who had positively identified two separate members of 29155 years apart, about 8 years apart, and 1,000 miles apart, one in Tbilisi, Georgia, and the other in Frankfurt, Germany. I want to start with you, Christo. We've been working on this for about a year ourselves, but 60 Minutes has been doing this for 5 years. This is the fourth or fifth segment they've done on Havana. This story has kind of taken off like wildfire. I know that it's been read and digested at very, very high levels at the U.S. government and in the intelligence community. Walk us through a little bit about what we uncovered here, and you in particular, in sort of mapping. I mean, you're probably the first person to have identified the existence of this military unit, and we have a database, essentially, of all the known members, at least up until very recently. So what was our methodology here? What did we do?
Correct you a little bit, because we didn't really work just for a year on this. Roman and I started looking into this probably in 2020 at the latest. It's when a lot of people came forward complaining that they were former operatives from the U.S. government or the CIA. Many of them had left because they were victims or they had family members who had been hit. And they felt that this is not really given sufficient diligence by their own agency, and they had turned to us as investigative journalists with some success before that to look into it, to give it a second look. And we did that, and we slow-paced it, slow-walked it, because it's a very controversial topic. We started from a very skeptical point of view. I will let Roman speak for himself, but I did start with, as a skeptic, thinking, how would this work? And the biggest question for me was not really how would this work technically, because we're never fully aware of all the technical developments. And of course, we might be surprised, and we should be surprised, because governments should know better than we do. The biggest question for me was there the capability for such a mass global attack by any government? Would any government have the people to send to locations where this was happening? And as time went by, we heard about more and more locations. Initially, it was Havana, but then out of the woodwork came Geneva, Vienna, Berlin, Phuket, and Hanoi, Belgrade. So who would have the capability to do all of that? So that was kind of the thing that gave us reason to be skeptics. Nobody has that capability. And if anybody did, we thought, it would be the Russians with their unit 29155, which is supported by a lot of locals, east of stations, masquerading as military attachés around the world. But we didn't have enough evidence to point to any particular overlap or any number of overlaps, which would give us the hypothesis this may be them. And then, as time went by, we discovered this very, very, very interesting document, which initially we ignored, again, as a not sufficiently overlapping with the topic. The document was in the mailbox of one of the commanders of Unit 29155. In fact, in the email box of the aide assistant to that commander, who was sort of doing his paperwork for a new Kremlin job that this commander had just gotten promoted to. This was in 2019, and it referred to a sort of a tax declaration or a anti-corruption declaration that this commander of Unit 29155 had failed to complete properly when he applied for the Kremlin job. Didn't apply, he was given the job, but he still had to go through the motions. And he had forgotten to mention a particular income stream that had taken place at the end of 2017. And that referred to some competition that he had won. And there was a back and forth between this assistant to the commander and the Kremlin accountant saying, well, I need explanations why he did report this money. Ultimately, attached to this mail chain is a document which literally says this money is given for handing over all the IP rights in research done in the context of a competition, which this commander won. The competition was titled Finding the Perspectives for Use of Acoustic Weapon in Urban Warfare Scenarios. So this is literally what connected this unit, potentially, in our heads, to this Havana weapon. And then we started looking for incidents of overlap between travel of members of this unit. And we, better than anyone, I think, out in the world, have a complete picture of who's a member and who's an aide to this unit. We have probably about 100 names by now, people who travel undercover around the world, including people who are local helpers, local military attachés or other diplomat cover helpers of this unit around the world. And we started finding overlaps. So this is where, really, for the last year, we've been trying to perfect and fine-tune the overlaps. That's how we got to this.
And I mean, a great deal of weight in this investigation has to do with the very remit of 29155. It had been reported before the Office of the Director of National Intelligence came out a year ago with its finding that it is, quote, very unlikely that a foreign adversary is behind these anomalous health incidents, that, you know, the U.S. Intelligence community had been able to geolocate GRU registered vehicles kind of sort of in the vicinity of where these alleged attacks took place. But that led to the analysis that, well, there are Russian spies everywhere, right? And they're always snooping and collecting data and doing surveillance. But 29155 has a very, very specific raison d'etre, right? They do assassinations. They do sabotage. They blow things up. And they use homemade detonators and explosive devices to do it, which we showed in one of our previous investigations. In the case of Montenegro, they sponsor and orchestrate coups to overthrow governments. There's been some hacking and other things that they do as well. But their very presence in the location of where these attacks took place. And again, we had two eyewitnesses who positively identify Yegor Gorienko and Albert Avryanov in two different cities separated by like almost a decade. Their very presence begs the question, well, if they weren't wielding some directed energy device and conducting these attacks, what the hell were they doing there? Right? I mean, the intelligence community has the burden of explaining to all of us what is the alternative explanation for why these specific Russian intelligence operatives were in these places. Roman, Christo alluded to the fact you were a little bit skeptical coming into this investigation. Why did you not think that 29155 might have any responsibility for Havana syndrome? And I want to emphasize, we haven't definitively proven this. We have just laid out all the evidence which hitherto had been not in the public domain. And as far as I'm concerned, based on the reporting that's followed from this investigation, hadn't been in the hands of very senior people in the intelligence community. So, Roman, explain your skepticism initially going into this.
So, first of all, I think that we were skeptical maybe in the first year, but I remember that in already 2020, one, I think, because I remember that I was in Vienna at that time. I spoke with Yulia Yov, and she asked, and we said already that we found some scientists that research something that is not Novichok, but they speak with the GRU agents, and this is very suspicious. And so we think that Havana syndrome may be real. And she asked, like, how likely you think it can be? And I said, like, around 75%. And she was actually very surprised, because though she wrote this big article about this, she almost like broke the story when the vast majority of people didn't know about this. She herself at this point was not sure. So this was a time when in public discourse, it was like some very strange theory that needs to be proven. But we already thought that it is worth pursuing. And I think that now what we have is not just coincidence of the trips and not just eyewitnesses. We have three dimensions of this investigation and arguments. The first is these trips. The second is that we have documents that prove that this concrete military unit made research of so-called acoustic weapon, as they call it. And another dimension is medical dimension that first of all proves that this is statistically impossible that such big amount of people have so-called minor syndrome. And secondly, we know that this syndrome...
Can you explain what that is?
Yes, I will elaborate a little bit about this more, but I will just mention that like statistical idea that first of all, we know that we have too many people who have this syndrome, and secondly, we know that this concrete syndrome was researched in Russia only by one medical academy, because it's very rare. It was researched only by this concrete military academy where the people from 2955 work, and we know that, like, Mishkin, for example, graduated from this military academy, that Sergei Chapur, who is like number one in Avidyanov phone calls, he is professor in this academy. So this cannot be coincidence. So we have these three very independent layers of arguments that kind of prove each other. And speaking about minor syndrome itself, so it is recently actually found that syndrome in 1990s. That means that if you have some problems with some ear bones, in some certain conditions, you can develop symptoms such as loss of balance, some strange noises, so-called like hyper-accusation, when you hear very soft sounds as annoyingly loud, and you can even hear the movements of your eyeballs. So some physiological processes from inside your head start sound something for you. So this is very irritating. This is very problematic. You can't actually continue working in this kind of conditions. And this like cluster of symptoms is pretty unique. So you can't just there are not a lot of things that can have this cluster. And so it was invented in, it was found in the middle of 1990s, and was called minor syndrome for the doctor from Stanford who found it then. And we already contacted him, and I hope that we will continue our research together with the best doctors who can explain us more about the statistics of this, how widespread this thing is, and how this physiology works. But it looks like that the impulse microwaves can really cause this syndrome.
And just a little more context. So in the 60 Minutes broadcast, they showed Joy, we're calling her Joy, who is the spouse of an American diplomat stationed in Tbilisi, who was hit in 2021. She is the one who positively identified Albert Avryanov, the son of Andrei Avryanov, the founding commander of 29155, who Roman mentioned is constantly in contact with Dr. Chapur.
And she has had two surgeries for Mitre syndrome. She's had holes in the bones of her inner ear, had to have metal plates on both sides of her head, probably facing a third surgery. So we incorporated the fact that she was suffering from this very rare condition, which has a more clinical name as well. And the fact that Dr. Chapur, of all people, his research facility was one of the few places in Russia to have any clinical...
The only place in Russia.
And suddenly, we were contacted by several other people, including two Canadians who similarly were diagnosed with this thing, and one CIA officer who was hit in Warsaw and also London, who also has a diagnosis. And according to Dr. David Relman, funnily enough, the leading scientific investigator into Havana syndrome, who wrote or co-chaired the expert panel report on plausible causes for it in 2022, works at Stanford University, and the dean of his particular college is Lloyd Mitre, the doctor who discovered this condition. So we asked him, so what do you know about this thing? And he said, I spoke to him just this morning, something like 0.5% of the population have it, but an even smaller subset of the population are symptomatic and require the kind of medical intervention that these victims had. And I said, and of all the cases of AHI, the fact that there are already four people who've been diagnosed with it, he says that's exceedingly uncommon. Right. Right. So, I mean, this is another line of inquiry, right? And the fact that also there's a tangible physiological effect. I mean, one of the arguments against Havana syndrome being real is that it's a sociogenic illness. This is all psychosomatic. You know, I talk about weird symptoms to you, you start to develop them, but there's no proof. There's nothing in MRI brain scans that to suggest brain damage, et cetera. But holes in the ear are not caused by any kind of psychosomatic, you know, problem. I mean, that is a physical medical condition. So Christo, walk me through a little bit about why, you know, this investigation in particular has been so controversial. I mean, some of the pushback we're getting on social media, in correspondences, well, okay, great. You know, circumstantial evidence, very interesting. 29155 in these places. They're doing research into acoustic weapons. But hey, everyone's doing research into acoustic weapons. No doubt the Americans are doing it, the French, the Germans, the British. You haven't shown that, you know, Albert Avrianov is literally pulling the trigger of some device or a gun firing ultrasound or microwave radiation at these people. And yet, this is evidence that has not come to light yet, right? I mean, it's in the public interest to know that the assessment that it is very unlikely a foreign adversary has anything to do with this is a little more complicated. I mean, we can add to what we've just said. In open source, the Russians have been boasting about researching and developing exactly these kinds of weapons for years. Putin has said that by whatever year it was, we'll have directed energy weapons. The former defense minister in Russia, Serdukov, was talking about by 2022, we'll have all of these new devices. Explain why you think that there's more of a compelling case here for attribution.
Well, first of all, if you treat this whole incident as a series of crimes, and if there was an organized crime group or a regular criminal on the other side, on the culprit side, it would be possible to call that culprit into a courtroom and for a prosecutor to interrogate them and to question them, and they would be able to present their defense arguments. It's a more complicated situation here. We have an espionage agency of a particular type, of a particular country, that will always obfuscate and deny and lie whether they were complicit to this or not. And what we're having here is another agency belonging to the country that represents most of the victims that has also reasons to either tell the truth or to obfuscate and lie, because there are many reasons why the intelligence community at large of the United States might not want the full truth told at this point in time. So we are in a very unique situation where we have to have at least a prosecutor putting out the potential hypothesis, the charges, and somebody acting also as a defense for the lawyer for these criminals who also happen to be a government. So what we've done so far is we've presented the argument for the prosecution, and I believe it's a consistent, concise argument. It includes the three critical ingredients of any convincing prosecution case, which is motive, opportunity, and means or motive means an opportunity. The motive is clear. I mean, Putin has put it out in the open. In 2012, he said, we need this kind of weapon because other weapons are old-fashioned. And something interesting that he said there as well is, unlike traditional conventional weapons, including nuclear, something that uses new phenomenon of new physical methods and in this particular string of examples he gave, ray weapons and directed energy weapons, they will not get the immediate reaction that the use of a nuclear weapon or a gun would do, because they're, some of them are no lethal and they are harder to track. So motive is there. I mean, it's been out there. Let's add to the motive the fact that Patrushev himself, Nikolai Patrushev, the head of the National Security Council of Russia, a year ago boasted that over the last 10 years, they've disabled hundreds of American and Western intelligence operatives. And disabled, we haven't heard of assassinations of 100 operatives, but we've heard of hundreds disabled. So the motive, yes, the motive is there. The means, well, we've seen that the Russians at least believe that they have the means because they've awarded this particular commander, and that's the only one that we've seen. We must have many, many other such projects that are considered to be completed and awarded, but that we have at least one proof that they believe one particular type of acoustic weapon is working. And then the question is, do they have the opportunity? And now we've proven that a unit that has no other brief than to assassinate, disable, blow up things, they have no capability to do traditional intelligence in terms of data gathering. They have medical doctors on each of their forays, on each of their teams, which is only consistent with a kinetic operation on something that can have a blowback on their own people, either poisoning with Novichok, where they can touch the bottle and poison themselves, or exposure to a kinetic energy weapon, which may blow back on them. And by the way, a lot of the research that has been done in this area has resulted in collateral damage to the scientists themselves, because it's a dangerous thing to do if you accidentally shoot yourself with a ray gun. It's not the best thing that that you can hope for. So we have the three ingredients in place. And I've seen a lot of pushback by people saying, no, that's not motive. Why would they disable spies? I think any reasonable person will know why they're doing that. What, if they could, why they would do that. So what we have now is at least a hypothesis that shows six by now overlaps that this theme has temporarily and location-wise with incident. Now, what has to happen in the normal world here? Somebody must act as a defense attorney for these criminals, for these criminals, and they're criminals because they're already indicted on other charges of assassinating or attempted assassinations. So they already have the recidivist, repeat offender status, just so you know. Well, nobody's doing that except for people randomly on the internet saying, we don't believe so. You know who should do that? The U.S. government should do that. The U.S. government should come forward and say why we believe that this is not it. Because what they've done so far is a black box refusal and denial. It's a black box. We don't know why they conclude that there's no foreign interference here. We've given them one reason to believe otherwise, and they should say, no, we believe they were there for a different reason. We know that they were there to poison somebody, right? We don't need to know what exactly that is, because maybe they have the reasons to keep that secret. But they should come forward and say, we know what they were doing in these places. And only then we can start pursuing different avenues.
I think also one of the nuances that's lost here is, you know, people say the intelligence community has dismissed this as a nothing, right? And there's no phenomenon here. Yes, the victims have suffered. They're being paid compensation. Some of them are anyway. But there's no proof of anything, and we should all go home. Except the intelligence community is a very large, sprawling, expansive apparatus consisting of, you know, more specific agencies than Americans are aware of. But of the top ones, the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, and the Defense Intelligence Agency, there were varying levels or assessments in confidence of the attribution or the finding, rather, that it's very unlikely a foreign adversary is responsible for this. And on the show, 60 Minutes, last Sunday, Greg Edgreen, retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army, the lead investigator for the Defense Intelligence Agency, I mean, funnily enough, the American counterpart to the GRU, said categorically, this is the Russians. If it's not the Russians, I'll come back on the show and eat my tie. And this is a guy who had access to all the classified intelligence, all the data that you would expect a Pentagon intelligence officer of his stature to have. This does not suggest to me that there is unanimity in the so-called intelligence community about Havana syndrome. And in fact, I mean, we have talked to former CIA officers. In some cases, we've had messages from current CIA officers sent to us by proxy that, you know, if not quite a cover-up, that this is a debate that's still raging and it's been deeply politicized. And there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that have not been treated with the kind of respect and scrutiny that they deserve to. So Ramon, like when we put this out, we were joking, you know, this is going to get a lot of attention in the Western press and in the English language speaking world, but not necessarily in Russia. And yet this story took off like wildfire, the Russian version of the story, that is, in a way that we haven't seen since the insider unmasked the attempted or the actual assassins who attempted to kill Alexei Navalny in 2020. Can you talk a little bit about the reaction in Russia to the investigation?
Yes, actually, it was pretty surprising for me because I really thought that, like, for most of Russians, it's out of question that Russian intelligence is ready to kill or harm people inside and outside the country. So recently they have killed Navalny. Why wouldn't they kill or try to, I don't know, to harm some foreign diplomats or especially CIA agents? So, but it looks like that people really think that this is some kind of a new red line that is crossed, because this is still a different thing to when I think it's both they understand both in Russia and in the West that there is different thing when a dictator is coming after his enemies, and would it be oppositioners, journalists, etc. Would they be killed inside or outside of the country? And very different thing when you go after diplomats or agents of another superpower. It's almost casus belli, actually. And this is serious, not only for our audience, but we see that our diplomats like Maria Zakharova, who is representative of Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and Peskov, they immediately started commenting this. They usually try either ignore this or try like jokingly answer something like about how everybody around is insane and why they're just spreading disinformation and blah blah blah. But they didn't do this, I think, because they understand that this time it is really, really serious. It's more serious than Skripal poisoning. It's more serious than MH17 downing and many other crimes, because this is a new scale, and this is violation of so-called Moscow rules, when agents, it's Soviet times, Soviet period time rule, that you don't attack like people on each other's grounds. So Soviets don't do anything on USA ground, and Americans don't interfere into Russia. So actually, it was really violated already in 2016 during the interference in American elections. But this was kind of, you know, something happening in internet. So like something completely different. But this time we see direct physical attacks and possibly also on American ground. This is what we suspect. And everybody understands, and I think like Russian foreign minister understands that like traditions that were shaped by centuries of international relations, they force America to react very tough if this is proven. I think this is one of the reasons why intelligence community was so cautious with saying that we believe that it may be some other country, because they understand the consequences. The consequence is very, very quick and big escalation. But now I think what is already proven, at least for me, my colleagues, and I think that like politicians and officials will be taken as proven, that this is not something psychosomatic, that this is a thing that cannot be explained by some illness. This is an attack. This is proven by statistics, by medicals, etc., etc. So this is starting point. And then we just have a simpler choice. Who can really do this? So there were theories about Chinese, but I think if you look into our investigation, there is more than enough proof to explain that this is actually the Russians staying behind. So we don't have lots of things to persuade people already. Yet, if we already have proven that this is really happening, and this was the toughest part actually, because I don't know about Krista, but for me, the part like how it really can physically be done was the most like hard to believe part. And when we see that actually in medical sphere, in physics, amongst physics experts, they have consensus that, yeah, it's possible. There is so-called Frey effect when microwaves are accepted by ear as sound waves and harm neurological harm brain actually. So this this is proven that this exists. So now it's just the question who did it, and this is just a pragmatical question. And I think that why now American leadership is maybe like more silent than some people would expect this to be, is that because they understand how hard the consequence will be, and they need to make their own official investigation. They can't rely on our investigation, on journalists. They need to make their own investigation.
One other thing that sort of struck me in the course of researching, interviewing, reporting on this story was, if you look at the victims, and by the way, you know, thousands of people came forward and said, I have Havana syndrome, right? I mean, there are a lot of false positives here, because at one point, the CIA said, if you feel like you suffered from these symptoms, come contact us. So you can imagine. I mean, our email box runneth over with people who think that, you know, they're being targeted all the time. And again, not every case is valid. But of the victims we interviewed and investigated, we looked at their medical records. We took full inventory of their prior histories. You know, could they be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder? Could this be psychosomatic? We kind of ruled that out pretty quickly, given their backgrounds and also the fact that they didn't know of the existence of one another, and yet their symptoms manifested exactly the same way. But another aspect of this is, well, two points. One, it's called Havana syndrome because the first cases that became publicized around 2017 were recorded in 2016 in Havana, Cuba. And the hypothesis was, this is some attempt to disrupt U.S.-Cuban relations on the back of the rapprochement that was brokered by Barack Obama. And yet, in our investigation, we show there's an earlier case, at least one, in 2014 in Frankfurt, Germany. And this was one of the positive identifications of a 29155 guy. The U.S. government employee actually confronted Igor Gordienko in the parking lot while he was surveilling diplomatic license plates. But of the clusters of victims, cohort, I think, is the term of art they use, the ones that strike that stand out the most are Russia hands, specialists who have dedicated their work, either at a diplomatic or an intelligence level, to countermanding Russian malign behavior or aggression in Europe, North America, you name it. And we have a section of this story, which is called The Ghosts of Kyiv Station, where basically the CIA officers who inaugurated this rather incredible intelligence sharing program with Ukrainian military intelligence, GUR, starting around 2015, almost the entire station has either been targeted by this phenomenon, or their family members have been targeted by this phenomenon. I mean, it's kind of incredible. I mean, what are the implications? I mean, Roman, you described this as possibly a casus belli, and two of the arguments we've heard from victims and people who think that this is very real and the Russians are behind it, as to why the U.S. government isn't coming as clean as it might about it, are twofold. One, well, then what do you do about it? Russia is a nuclear power that threatens on an hourly basis to reduce the entirety of the West to radioactive ash. Are we going to go to war with Russia? I mean, what dimensions of that war? What would the dimensions of that war look like, right? And the second, no less profound, are if we acknowledge that American spies and diplomats and DOD officials are getting hit all over the world, and we can't protect our own people. There's nothing we can do about it. Who the hell is going to want to volunteer or get recruited to any of these services, right? It is going to hollow out the Foreign Service.
Many people think that like there is not a lot of waves of like instruments left to pressure Russia. But let's not forget that for many years of the existence of 2955, the main targets, main known targets, were not Americans. So would it be poisoning of Skripal? Would it be Gebrev? So it was like if you would be kind of like head of American intelligence, that would be on periphery of your attention for many years. So they would be aware of these people, but like, why would they really invest a lot of effort to catch them and to bring them to justice? Because actually, it's not like an American topic. And this is for the first time. This is not just an attack on American interests. It's just very explicit, very harmful, direct attack on CIA agents, on Ministry of Defense or officers. So like, they just this is the question of dignity of this service to prove that you can't do things like this. If you can't do this and stay and just then you put some people in a sanctioned list, especially those people who can't actually really travel if they work for Ministry of Defense, so that everybody understands that okay, you can continue, that like nothing happens, right? So this would be green light for continuing not only these operations but any operations against American CIA agents and diplomats and officers of Ministry of Defense. So they just can't afford this kind of weak reaction. So this must be something strong, and I think it can be something strong, because if they would invest a lot of efforts into hunting these people, I mean 2955, into hunting these agents around the world, this is not that difficult actually to arrest one or two of them who are still traveling. If me and Krista, like we already have a list of several dozens of them, we have just laptops and some, you know, some experience of looking into the database. We don't have millions of dollars. We don't have hundreds of people working for us. We just have some interest in this. But I don't know how Krista, I even don't count myself an expert on Russian military intelligence. I don't think that I can call myself I'm just like, it's my hobby actually. So even if we spending like just several years on this found several dozens of these agents, I bet CIA and FBI and other intelligences have much more resources to find these people, to predict some of their travels, to arrest them on some countries where it is possible because they travel all around the world. And if they will be brought handicapped to a public trial on American soil, that would be a good example. This is a little bit exaggerate. I'll go a little bit further too much. But I mean, yeah, if they will be arrested. So let's hope first that they will be just arrested and they will be brought to justice in public in the middle of attention of all over the world. That would be a lesson. We have never seen anything like this happened. And I think Putin is very pragmatic. He is just opportunistic. So if he sees that there is no consequence, why would he even think about stopping what he is doing? So I think that this is the message that we should deliver now to American political elite, because it looks like that they just don't understand the possible consequences of their silence right now.
One question that keeps coming up, it's actually a mistake to say only Americans have been targeted. Quite a lot of Canadians have been targeted as well, diplomats, spies, and so on. But one question that I think is a legitimate one is, why no Brits, French, Germans? You know, why are the Russians only doing this to mostly North Americans, as far as we know?
Another additional argument to this is that if it is just Americans, there are lots of American enemies who can possibly do this, like Chinese, for example. I think no one would believe that Chinese would go after, for example, British agents, because like for China, this European stuff is not interesting that much. So it looks like Russia wanted to make it super, super secret and very difficult to attribute to Russia, because they never, for example, used it against oppositioners, as we know, at least for now. They did it with Novichok, so they were not really afraid that Novichok would be attributed to Russia. But it looks like they never used microwaves against any other enemies to make it more difficult to attribute it to Russia.
I remember, speaking of the KGB, interviewing years ago Oleg Kalugin. And I asked him, you know, pointedly, you know, why is it that your service can go after people in the UK, in France, in Germany, in Europe, but, you know, why aren't there cases of this in the United States? He's like, what do you mean? He's like, that was the rule, not against the main adversary, but Europe, that's our playground. So I think another theory could be maybe they're dealing with British, German, French spies in a different manner, a more aggressive manner than they are American ones. Okay, on that note. We've had a lot of disruptions on the show. But anyway, great stuff as always. And I suppose I have to conclude myself in it this time, so that's nice. You've been listening to Foreign Office. I'm Michael Weiss, editor of the Insider English. We've been discussing our investigation into Havana Syndrome, which was done with 60 Minutes and Der Spiegel. If you haven't seen the 60 Minutes segment, I encourage you all to do it. I think it's the most watched segment they've aired all year. We will see you next week. My guests have been Roman Dobrohotov, the founding editor of The Insider, and Christo Grozev, the head of the investigations team at The Insider. Thanks very much.